Hello, everybody. This is Trey Stokes, the co-writer of Return of Pink 5, and...
This is Chris Hannell, co-writer and visual effects supervisor of Return of Pink 5.
Hey, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
So, in this commentary, we're going to be focusing on, of course, the visual effects, which are a huge component of the Pink 5 movies.
Yeah.
Huger than we would have liked.
Yeah, huge ass.
The hugest, quite possibly. We thought it was hard enough to shoot it, but posting it is the ongoing battle. This is where we get to actually point out, I think, in a few cases, things that I hope you maybe didn't even realize, if I can flatter us a little bit, that you were looking at a visual effect, but by gosh, you actually are. So, of course, the movie started with Chris and I sitting in a room dreaming up the story for it. I wanted Chris to be involved in it because, as I've said in other commentaries, that this is obviously something completely up his alley. He has the same kind of background as I do in Star Wars fandom and had already made some Star Wars fan films that are very popular and have a following, and we'd worked together by this point already on some other projects. So I thought, well, you know, I think I need another brain. This movie's going to be so big, it needs to be more than just my brain working on it. So I invited Chris to participate.
And I was quite flattered, sir, to say the least, to also be on the inside, to be a part of the core team on the Pink 5 trilogy as... The first movie that I had worked with you on was Double Shot, and I worked as, like, lighting guy. And then there was Pink 5 Strikes Back, and then I got moved up to Smoke Guy and doing some lightsaber rotoscoping and some effect stuff, and then a major promotion for Return of Pink 5. So it was very nerve-wracking at first, but quickly got to be something that I definitely enjoyed doing, and we locked ourselves in your living room. I think it was about 2 days combined where...
It was 2 or 3 days
that
we spent just writing.
We definitely said from the very beginning that we did not want to restrict ourselves because we thought we wouldn't be able to do something. We wanted to write it out as much as possible and make it the grandiose thing that we would like to do. And then our wise and much more knowledgeable producer would come in, smack us around, and we would cut it down from there. Of course, the best laid plans of mice and men.
Because Chris Reed, in fact, came in, and we sat there and watched him read it, and he kept laughing and giggling and chuckling, and we were waiting for him to go, okay, but you guys are crazy, let's be real now. And what he did when he put the script down was he said, I remember exactly what he said, he goes, well, we got to shoot this, which was not what we wanted to hear.
Part of us wanted to hear that, but at the same time, you know... There's the writing Trey Stokes and Chris Hannell, and there's the production Trey Stokes and Chris Hannell's. And the production Trey Stokes and Chris Hannell's came in and slapped the F out of us.
As they continue to do every day.
Yes, exactly.
Who wrote this? Who wrote this damn thing?
So, yeah.
What were they thinking?
And one thing that, you know, I can't remember to this day. Did I agree to be visual effects supervisor before or after we wrote the script? Because if I agreed after, that person should be put in jail.
I honestly don't remember, but it seems strange that you would have agreed to it had you really known what you were getting in for, but that's your own fault if it is.
Yes, it is. So what was it that I wrote on my blog recently? You know, some days it's the project that never ends, and some days it's the project that I really hope it never ends. I don't know. Take that as you will from a visual effects perspective.
And if nothing else, as long and drawn out and far longer a process than I ever expected we were in for, I don't even want to think about how long we thought it would take to finish Return of Pink 5. It's turned out just to be so much bigger and better than I really foresaw it being at the time, and that's been the terrible trap that we've been in, is like we've got to justify how good this has been turning out and how much people have been liking it, and that's why we keep sweating these visual effects and all the details much longer than probably is smart to do.
Well, but you know.
I just can't help it.
It's like painting yourself into a corner, only a good thing.
Yeah, we owe it to the project and to all the people who participated in the project over all this period of time to do it as much justice as we can in post-production. So that's why we keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we should point out is that I obviously work in the world of visual effects and have for a long time, and Chris had studied visual effects and gone to school for it. But I didn't, at the time, have a lot of hands-on experience with visual effects. I was fortunate in my way that I went straight to being a supervisor of visual effects without ever having actually had to do them, in terms in the CG world.
Right.
I came from the real world of physical effects and puppets and real creatures and creature effects and jumped into CG supervising creatures without having to actually do a lot of hands-on with software. So suddenly when it came to me that I had to do a lot of the hands-on work to assemble the show, I could edit, but when it came to doing visual effects, I really had not a lot of experience at all. And what little experience I had was from making the earlier Pink 5 movies. And Chris was out of school and had done some stuff and had a basic knowledge, but also not a lot of experience, too, if I may.
Yeah, I had gone to film school and had a lot of After Effects experience, not much in 3D. I ended up being in more of a writing, directing, administrative position than I did much of an animation position. So when we got to Return of Pink 5, definitely very little green screen experience, and I ended up being set supervisor on this, so... Boy, trial by fire by far.
As it was for all of us. You know, we all knew generically how to make this movie, but we didn't really know in a lot of cases specifically how to make the movie. So there's been an awful lot of on-the-job training, and it's continuing. There's things now that I look at Volume 1 and I go, oh, I'd like to fix that a little bit. I'd like to work on that a little bit, which, of course, I can't let myself do because I have to finish the rest of the movie.
No, bad trade.
Before I start special editioning everything. Well, we'll talk about Volume 1 and just a little bit of the process of the effects work that went into it. Are you ready to begin?
I am ready, sir.
All right, here we go. So this is where I recap how we do this. Go to Atom Films, go to Pink 5, Return of Pink 5 Volume 1, start the player. You'll see the Atom Films commercial that they'll stick on the front. Then after the commercial is over, you'll see the blue Long Ago in a Galaxy Far Away logo that will fade in and fade out. And at the point where it fades out and the yellow Pink 5 logo is about to hit the screen, that's where you restart this commentary and we'll be in sync with you from there on out. So I'm about to tell you to pause the commentary, and when you restart it, you should be watching Return of Pink 5 Volume 1 with us. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, pause. And here we are. So this opening credit is actually the first effect shot because we're looking at the stars, which we will then tilt down to Jabba's Palace, which was a very early effect shot that you put together, as I recall.
Yeah, it was also one of the first 3D models that I ended up doing was Jabba's Palace, and then a very, very complex Photoshop file to get it baked into the desert. And then, of course, the color correction, and then, of course, the sky. And I remember sending this to Mike Verda, one of our other effects artists, and getting about 50 notes before doing the second revision of it.
Yeah, we're not very good. Oh, no. And then, of course, we immediately segue into what is, I believe, really the only sequence in the entire movie that isn't an effect sequence. Everything you see in this opening scene with the girls chatting is, in fact, actually happening in front of the camera, and that's actually very rare for this movie, to have a scene where everything is just actually really there.
That just blows me away that that's on the same green screen stage, and it looks so full in the background.
Yeah, we're only a few feet away from where we shot the rest of the movie on a big green screen psych, and this is just a little set that our art department threw together. And then when we suddenly pop to the reveal of the Han and Carbonite, that is a big effect shot. It was, in fact, the first thing we ever shot. It was the first shot that we did on the movie. But, of course, we reshot it a few days later because we didn't do it right.
And we got to find out if I was if I knew what I was doing set supervising-wise, because we had to set up the tracking markers, and the shot was motion-tracked. There was a 3D plate that we turned into an image and then tracked it in After Effects. We tried it, like, 4 different ways before we finally settled on one. And it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, but again, there was a lot of steep learning curve.
Yes, exactly.
On that one. When we're facing the Han and Carbonite, then we're looking at a big digital world with a few real props. And then when we're anywhere else in this scene with Salacious and Han and Leia in the background, it's all real, but they're actually... a lot of hidden effects going on all the time. There's a lot of set extending going on. There's a lot of reframing. And in fact, the performance that's happening outside the arch is not how it happened when we shot it. Those have been retimed so that the performances sync up a little better for the final edit. So you're actually looking at a different take outside the arch than was happening inside the arch. It got a little crazy.
Which meant rotoscoping around Salacious Crumb.
Yeah, even as simple as this is, there's effect shots going on. Now, of course, we can point out, since you're here, that this is, in fact, you kissing Charisse Bangs, who's playing Leia. We pressed you into service. What was that like?
I blanked. I blacked out and immediately fainted afterwards. They had to revive me with an EMT crew, but I think it was good. I think.
Yeah. Jabba was a quick one element that Keith Matz put together for us.
Yay, Keith.
Yay, Keith. And then we're going to snap into the first really grandiose effect shot, which is, of course, the desert reveal, which was one of the first shots we did and one of the last shots we threw away and completely redid again. Because our early version was done so early in the production, by the time we got to the end of the production, we'd gotten so much better at doing visual effects, we said, you know, I think we can do that desert shot so much better than we did before.
The foreground elements really make it. Then we get to this shot. This is also the second version of this shot.
Yeah. And then, of course, the shot of her walking up and throwing her stuff to the ground and walking up to the X-Wing was a great source of suffering for you for months and months and months, because it's a very ugly tracking shot to have to put together. And it's one of the most complicated shots in the movie, because if you look at the shot, it's a huge tracking, craning, dollying, tilting shot, and you try to track the background into it the whole way.
But it works.
I just remember you just week after week, you know, just version after version coming.
It was much trial and error, but it eventually worked out, and I think it ended up being taking a 2D image of the backdrop, projecting it onto a 3D plane inside a light wave scene using the Bougie tracking information, and then rendering that out, throwing that into After Effects, doing another track for rotoscoping, and then spitting out the final product, and it ended up working, and very proud of that.
Yes, it was just that simple. Yes. That was the beauty of it.
But wait, there's more.
Yes. Well, of course, this whole scene is, every shot you see, there's rotoscoping, and it's all green screen, except for the X-Wing that she's standing next to. Nothing else is the real world, so anytime there's a little bit of sky or a little bit of desert off in the distance, that's rotoscoped and green screened and had to be cleaned up and the edges tightened up, and a whole lot of work going on in this, you know, scene of two people standing having a conversation.
Even Obi-Wan went through two or three different versions of how we had him color-wise in the sequence, yeah. Because, you know, normally when you see Obi-Wan in a ghost version like this, it's usually in a dark scene.
Yeah, I don't believe, I think we looked, Star Wars, no Star Wars movie ever did a ghost in daylight.
And,
and we had to figure out what that looked like.
Not only daylight, but daylight in the middle desert of
daylight.
A desert, yeah.
Yeah. So we had to really think about what he would look like that would look good and read as a ghost.
Yeah, and I think it's still really, I mean, it's just, you can't get it much more contrasty than this without it looking like he's not a glowing ghost, and it just looks like a really weird dark blue color. But I think it works out. The main thing that we were concerned about was the fact that you'd still be able to see his facial expressions.
So here's a scene that I know you were proud of, is the controllers, not to mention the fact that you are one of them.
Yes.
you're the middle guy, doing a cameo again on screen. Mm-hmm. Second of your three cameos in the movie. But the other thing is, of course, that this was an early sequence that we put together, and the secret behind the scenes is that there's only one costume, and all of you guys are actually comped together in three passes.
And then, of course, the 3D element background was built and rendered as a still, and then all thrown together and made it look pretty good, I might say.
Yes, indeed. We should also point out again, all the space approach shots and the backgrounds of the hangar sequence were created by Mike Verda, and,
yay,
and
Mike.
Spectacularly. Mike Verda was another professional effects artist who forced us to, in many ways, raise our game, because he would turn in shots and we'd go, oh, our other shots look bad compared to these shots, so we had to make our shots look better.
Especially in the area of compositing, the work that he's doing with, especially like the stormtroopers up against the background looks flawless to me. And when he first turned that
totally
in, I'm like, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah. So again, you know, just have to point out that if you can't tell or didn't know already that other than when she's up close to the X-Wing, there's nothing real in this world at all except for the floor. And not even the floor is always real. Parts of it are painted in as well. But this entire world, except for the actors that you're seeing on screen, does not exist. And ditto for the throne room. Nothing but floor is real, and it's the same floor, as a matter of fact.
Another tracking shot. The approach walking up to Darth Vader was another tracking shot that we had to do. Mark Kaczynski was one of our main artists for doing a lot of the 3D elements of the throne room. He took a very blah model from the internet and turned it into something amazing for what we needed, especially the lighting. Did some really great work with this. And then I spent many a day compositing, color timing, building in new elements. This was my life for a while, this sequence.
Yep. Even to the point where Steve Stanton, when you see Steve Stanton as the Emperor, if you see them all in one shot together, those are separate elements that are put together because Steve was not, in fact, 20 feet overhead. Those are just created together. And so even here, a lot of times when you're seeing what looks like, oh, it's a shot of Amy talking, the floor behind her has been extended, or we've added, of course, that pit. You see that little bit of pit down the Death Star shaft peeking in at the corner. That, of course, is a digital creation that's tracked into it.
Oh, I was going to say the lightsaber duel.
Well, lightsabers, first of all, rotoscoped by Fig, Teague Christie, whom we call Fig.
Yay, Fig. And yeah. I get to do my shout-out for me being in the Vader suit for the fight sequence.
Here's your third cameo, because you are, in fact, Vader in this Vader fight.
I'm the Lon Chaney of the Pink 5 universe.
Yes, exactly. I can't even begin to imagine what that was like to have to do that fight in that outfit.
It takes your breath away. And not a good way. One note that I have to say about Darth Vader is rotoscoping Darth Vader and trying to comp him into a scene, because he's the most reflective thing you're ever going to have to comp, and there's green spill all over the place, and from time to time his eyes will disappear while you're trying to do a comp, and you have to be really, really careful about that. And I'd get note after note, his eyes are gone, you have to recomp his eyes.
But at the same time, he had an advantage because at least his head had hard edges, whereas Amy, of course, has got flyaway hair going all over the place.
Yes.
So she certainly had her own issues when it was time to comp her from green screen.
Out of the three people in the scene, the Emperor was the easiest to comp, and he's the funniest.
Hopefully you're laughing and not looking at his roto edge when you're looking at him on screen.
We're trying to do the job well enough that you're not getting distracted by what's going on visual effects-wise. And black levels, I remember being a real...
were a huge problem, and actually in this version that you see on Atom Film, still are, just a little bit. Atom Film's version of Volume 1 is a little darker than it actually is in our version. It got darkened somewhere in the encoding process. So we're actually getting away with a little bit more than we would have, because if you see it in its original brightness, you see a little bit of problem with some of the black levels, so it's actually a blessing in its way. One of the things about this sequence that was good and bad to work on is that you're just doing a lot of the same thing over and over and over again. It's like you've just got all these repeated shots of there's a close-up of her and a close-up of Vader and a close-up of the Emperor. And you just, it's the same technique for all of them, but you just keep having to do them over and over again for
copy
every shot.
Copy and paste, yeah. tweak, copy and paste. And then, of course, when you've been working on it for as long as we had, making sure you start losing the consistency of it. You start going, is this blue the same as that blue? And it kind of gets muddy, and your mind starts to go numb.
Yeah.
And one final note on all of that, if you'll notice, there's a bit of blue in the throne room all the way through. And it was my memory. You know, I remember the throne room being blue. And then when we started working on it, it was really blue. And you kept coming back, too blue, it's too blue. Yeah, and then you finally just showed
me. It made Stacy look like a zombie. And, you know, whether or not that's correct, it's like, well, but she just doesn't look good. She looks scary.
Finally, Trey just showed me still images from the throne room in Return of the Jedi and just said, look, it's not that blue. And I, all right, my mind's playing tricks on me.
The set is very blue and gray and dark, but the lighting is not blue and gray and dark. The lighting in the original Return of the Jedi is very bright, and the characters are very well lit. So so we had a devil of a time trying to find a look that all blended together. Not to mention the fact that you've got three characters in basically a dark room who are all wearing black outfits. So trying to make sure you could see them and everything wasn't just all muddy and pitch dark was quite a struggle. So that's Volume 1, which, you know, in a brief overview of the effects. But the difference between Volume 1 and Volume 2 is Volume 1 was a lot of the same sorts of effects over and over again, where you just had a lot of shots of X-Wing in the desert and people talking there, and then you had a lot of shots of a throne room and people talking there. Whereas Volume 2, the effects in Volume 2 are much more varied and much more complex is the nicest way to put it. They're way more complex.
If it had to be me and you doing the effects in Volume 1, we could get it done. We could get through with brute force. Whereas in Volume 2, it got to a point where we really have to build an effects team. We have to go out and look for those people that specialize in animation or specialize in texture work. It got to that level where it can't be a one-man crew anymore.
Yeah.
That's a healthy thing. You know, you gotta let the baby go every once in a while to get someone else to help you out. And you'll hear us talking much about that in the Volume 2 commentary.
Yes, Volume 2 is a much longer list of names of people who contributed sections to Volume 2. There's a lot more variation in the effects of what happened in Volume 2. So as hard as Volume 1 was for us to get finished, it was merely a preamble to prepare us for Volume 2. I think that about covers it for Volume 1. What do you think?
I think so, sir.
Any closing thoughts or anything at all?
You know, it'd been a while since I watched it, and now I want to go back and tweak a few shots.
And so do I.
Which also means we need to stop this commentary as quickly as possible before we do something rash.
We absolutely do, where we start making notes and start working on that and not finishing Volume 2, which we absolutely don't want that
exactly
to happen. So, and nobody does listening to this either, so Volume 1 is fine. Let's have Volume 2 instead. So
yes.
That's what we'll do. We'll go back to working on Volume 2. In fact, we are working on Volume 2. After we finish these commentaries, you're going to deliver to me some new renders for Volume 2, as I recall.
There's a render
and
going
very
right now.
So there you go. We are multitasking, folks. We are multitasking as we speak, quite literally as we speak. So thank you very much, Chris Hanel.
Thank you,
not
sir.
Just for this commentary, but for, you know, all that stuff.
Thank you for, you know. Well, you know.
Someday this war is going to end, and we'll finish Return of Pink 5, but not tonight. Tonight we're going
to
work on it.
And to answer a reference with a reference, I'm doing my part.
Well played, sir.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Thank you very much, and we will see you again. Good night.
Good night.